Some of you, I hope it was young, someone not so young, but you are still here, which is very nice. It doesn't matter. As long as you're young at heart, that's what really matters, I think, yeah. So, whatever age, it's always, this idea of unconditional love is always useful in life. It doesn't matter whether you're young or old, of course. It's always a very powerful thing. And it's one of these very typical Buddhist things, this idea of unconditional love. Can you hear me properly? Yeah? Okay. So what does it mean, unconditional love? What does it actually mean? And of course, what it means is that you accept somebody for who they are, for what they are, whatever qualities they are. You don't say to somebody, you have to be this way before I love you, you have to be that way, you have to get good grades in school, you have to buy me the PlayStation or whatever. You have to do certain things before you deserve my love. You get, regardless of who you are, regardless of what sort of person you are, you accept that person fully, 100%, with all their qualities, whatever those qualities may be. And those qualities can sometimes be bad qualities, because all of us have a certain amount of problematic qualities inside of us. Sometimes we get upset, sometimes we get angry, sometimes we say things that perhaps we shouldn't be saying. And yet if somebody loves us, they accept those qualities too. They take the whole person, not just part of the person. This is what it means by unconditional love. Love without conditions. Love that accepts you as a person, fully, 100%, nothing left out. Now that is a very high bar to reach. It's a very difficult thing to do, to love somebody like that. It's very something that takes a lot of training. One of these trainings, of course, is precisely the Buddhist training. But when you meet somebody who has the sense of unconditional, have you ever met a person like that in your life? Somebody who accepts you for what you are? Sometimes we meet people who maybe reach a certain extent, they reach that ability to have unconditional love. And you notice that what happens when somebody has an attitude towards you, whoever they may be, sometimes it may be like a grandparent, sometimes grandparents are very kind to the grandchildren, and you have often children have a more easy relationship perhaps with the grandparents than with the parents, because it's a bit further away. And when you become a grandparent, you become a bit indulgent of your grandchildren. It's very common. So sometimes grandparents are a bit more like unconditional love for the grandchildren. But sometimes you meet special persons in all walks of life who have a sense of unconditional love. And when you come into their presence, how do you feel? You feel at ease. You feel relaxed. You feel accepted. You don't have to prove anything anymore. You don't have to show that you are the right kind of person. You don't have to speak in the right way. You don't have to do this and that to please them. You can be yourself. And there is an enormous amount of sense of freedom, of relaxation when that happens. When you can just be yourself. You don't have to sort of play the perfect person. You don't have to please everybody. You don't have to do what is right according to other people's wishes. But you can be yourself. It is a very freeing kind of feeling when that happens. And sometimes people think, well, if you have that freeing kind of feeling inside of you, and then you can start doing whatever you want. You don't actually behave properly anymore. But actually what happens is usually the opposite. Usually when you get somebody's unconditional love, you don't become a nasty person when that happens. Usually you become a good person, because at that point you realize that you have... Thank you very much. Very good. Unconditional love. You become a good person because you realize that you have to take responsibility for yourself. When other people try to push you around, when you have the feeling that they have an agenda, that they're trying to get you to be in a certain way and then manipulate you one way or another, then you want to rebel, because you don't want to feel like imprisoned by other people. You don't want to feel that they are kind of controlling your life. That is a terrible feeling. But when somebody frees you, when somebody says you can be who you are, then you don't have the pressure anymore from the outside. That's when you don't need to rebel anymore. When you don't need to rebel, you take responsibility. That is the way it seems to me, because there's nobody pushing you around. You actually start to take responsibility for yourself. So it is very, for me, the understanding of unconditional love, the power of unconditional love, that it frees yourself and it frees the people around you to actually be able to be who you are, and then to take charge of your life in the right way. That is the power of unconditional love. So how can we do that? I mean, you can't just go around seeking people who have unconditional love everywhere and being in their presence so you can feel good. That doesn't work, right? You know that. If you're always going to seek the person who has unconditional love and only be with those people, you're not going to have many friends because there aren't that many people around who have this unconditional love. And even if you found one such person, chances are you wouldn't be able to stay with that person all the time. We have to live in the real world, as they say, where people don't have unconditional love. People don't always do the right thing by us. So we're not going to have that sense of freedom that comes from that thing by seeking it externally. You can never seek these things externally by being with the right person, being in the right environment. So what can you do? And the answer is, you have to develop it yourself. That is the answer. And the reason why that works is because when you develop unconditional love, and you actually have unconditional love for others, you also have unconditional love for yourself. Because these things go together. You cannot just have unconditional love for like other people, not for yourself. If you have unconditional love, it is something which goes everywhere. So that is the answer. If you know, if you have a sense of the value of unconditional love, then you develop that in yourself for other beings. And then, by doing that, not only do you free others who are with you, but you're also freeing yourself from these constraints that we sometimes feel. So how do we go about developing unconditional love? And the answer is, of course, like so many things in Buddhism, it's not an easy thing to do. It's something which takes a lot of work, and this is what the spiritual path is about. It's about doing the work which is required to actually achieve some of these beautiful states of mind. Now, one of the very first things that you have to do to achieve unconditional love is to start off by how you deal with other people in this life. Because unconditional love is all about other people, right? So how do you deal with other people in your life? We all have people that we find difficult, or that people that are hard to work with, that we find are giving us a hard time, people who maybe are bullies, people who do all kinds of stuff, which is very unpleasant. How do we deal with that? And I know for myself, even in my monastic life, maybe some of you think that monastic life is so good and great, and nothing ever, there's no difficulty in monastic life because everybody's very kind and very like that. And to some extent that's true. I have to say that living monastic life, generally speaking, you have a very good group of people around you. And if you come to Bodhinyana Monastery, you find it's a very harmonious place. People talk nicely to each other, they are kind to each other, and it's a good feel. But in all places where people come together, there's also sometimes a sense of difficulties. It may not surface so much because you restrain yourself, but sometimes they are just people that you find very, very difficult. And I have had that occasionally in my monastic life. Sometimes, particularly one person many years ago, I remember I found it absolutely impossible to deal with this person. And at times I thought to myself, this went on for a number of years. At times I thought, maybe I should just leave the monastery because I can't stand this anymore. This is just too hard. And this is like the escape way. You want to escape because there is a difficulty in life. You want to get away from it. And of course, from a Buddhist point of view, if you try to escape, you don't learn anything. You just become stuck in the same old problem. And anyway, you realize you cannot really escape. You escape one difficult person, you go somewhere else, there's somebody else difficult. There's always somebody difficult around. No matter where you go in the world, there's always going to be difficult people. You know what I mean? You go from one school to another school, there's a bully in this school, there's a bully in that school as well. You can't just escape bullies by going from one school to another school. You have to find out how to deal with these difficult people. And it's the same thing throughout life. There's always going to be difficult people. There's only one solution. Find out how to deal with these difficult people. So I started to ask myself, I realized quickly that the solution, even though I wanted to leave sometime, is not really a solution. Because, Bodhinyana Monastery is as good as it gets. I'm not going to find a place any better than that. So, what do I do with this person? And what I do, and this is really the path to overcome any kind of interpersonal relationship, interpersonal problems, is to try to accept that person for who they are. How do you do that? You understand that people come from all sorts of backgrounds, all sorts of conditionings, all had all sorts of different parents, all sorts of different teachers, all sorts of conditionings and things influencing them over their life. Maybe they had a past life which has been very difficult. They had parents in this life who have given them a really hard time. Sometimes people have very, very difficult childhoods, for example. And it turned out this particular person had an extremely difficult childhood. Of course you become a bit messed up if you, as a child, you have a really hard time. And the more you think like that, the more you understand that this is not the person who is actually being nasty to you. It is just all these causes and conditions that has created this person into being who they are today. They don't really want to be like that. Everybody wants to be kind if they can be kind. You know what I mean? If you had a choice and you wanted to be kind and like a nasty person, what would you be? You'd want to be kind, right? Everybody wants to be kind because we know that kindness is equivalent to happiness. Nastiness is equivalent to unhappiness. There's something deep inside of us which tells us that is true. So because of that, we all want to be kind. If somebody is not kind, if somebody is difficult, it is because they're not able to be kind. They can't. The conditioning, the background, everything is so strong, so powerful, that it drives them in the wrong direction, in the direction they don't want to be. And when you understand that, the more you understand that people are not nasty by nature, they are themselves the victims of their own conditioning, of their own background, of their own past lives, or whatever it is, then you can let go. You can say, okay, you know, that's the way they are. There's nothing really much I can do about this. You let them be the way they are. And you can forgive them for the things that they actually do. Now this is difficult, and sometimes in life you find that somebody is too close to you. They are so close to you that you cannot get enough perspective to actually forgive them. It's like when you have somebody is in your face all the time. It's like the hand, you know, you can't see the hand properly when it's there. You hold it away, then you can see it clearly. You can see, okay, five fingers, whatever. It is the same thing with personal relationships. Sometimes the people are too close to you, they're too in your face. You can't get any perspective. You can't think clearly about who they are. Sometimes you need to just withdraw a little bit from that relationship. Pull a little bit back, hang out with some other friends, hang out with some other people, have some other colleagues for a while. Don't talk to so much to that person. Just stay a little bit away. Because when you stay away, that is when you can have perspective. And it's important to do that. This is also has to do with kindness to yourself, to withdraw a little bit when the situation is too difficult and too hard. This is kindness to yourself. And when you withdraw, you can look at the situation in a new way. And this whole idea of people being the cause, being a result of their conditioning, this is very much related to the very profound Buddhist teaching of non-self, that there's nothing inside of you which really drives you, which makes you be a bad person, apart from the conditioning. And reflecting on that idea of non-self is actually very, very useful. Why is it that we often get so upset by other people, by other situations? It is because other people will feel that it's between me and them. It's a personal issue, right? It's personal between me and them. It's never personal from a Buddhist point of view. Never. It's always just people reacting to conditions. When people do something bad towards you, something you don't like, why is that? It's because you happen to have those conditions right there and then that triggers some other conditions in that person. And that's why they do something bad. If it had been another person with a similar kind of conditions as you, they would have got angry. They would have done the bad thing against them instead. It's just conditions, that's all. It's never personal. And that is very important, because when you understand that things are never personal between people, it's never personal, it's just conditions, it takes away so much of the negativity and upset and the anger. How can you be angry when it's not personal, when you know that it's just reactions to the conditions and the situation? Then you can let go. You can say, enough. Nothing to do with me. It's no big deal. Just let it go. So that is the first step for unconditional love. It's a very difficult step, but it's actually very important if you can think like that. you can allow things to go. And then, when you have that step, then you can move on to the second step, which is seeing the good qualities in other people and understanding the good qualities in other people. This is very important, because if you always focus on the bad qualities in other people, it's impossible to love them or to have compassion to them in any meaningful way. It's very important to have that ability to focus on those good qualities. And it is great, you know, in a Buddhist fellowship like this, I always like to point out to people that in this group here, you have a great group of people around you. They may not be perfect, they're not always going to do what you like, everything, but these are people with good intentions, with good hearts, who want to do something good in the world, who want to actually be kind, be gentle. Okay, they're not always going to be successful, but they have that intention. It is something very beautiful and very powerful about people who have that intention or wanting to do what is right. It's exactly the same way when I think about the monks in Bodhinyana Monastery where I come from. I think about these monks, I think, gee, okay, not all of them are perfect, that's for sure. But there are people who are dedicated to something wonderful and something beautiful, something to purify themselves, to help themselves, to help other people in the world. And isn't that something absolutely marvelous, that there are people like that in the world? And you should think about the same way about the people, you know, here or part of the Buddhist fellowship. Think like that. These are beautiful people. They're dedicated to something wonderful and beautiful in their lives. And that is so worthy of respect, so worthy of love and compassion and kindness towards these people. And then you can build up a sense of gratitude inside of you. Yesterday I was talking at the lunch, Vaisak lunch and the Mother's Day lunch, about parents. And of course all of you, many of you here, are in a situation where you have to deal with your parents as well. And one of the problems when you're young is that you tend to think of your parents, you know, parents are like an obstacle often, you know, they're in the way, you're so close to them that they're all the time. So sometimes what you have to do to be able to actually have more compassion and understanding for your parents is actually to remember the good things about your parents. It is so important. So when you get a bit of distance, when you go away, you do a bit of meditation for yourself, remind yourself of all the things that your parents have done for you in this life. And, you know, this is not always easy because you're so close to your parents, but it's very, very worthwhile. Because when you see, remember the good things that your parents have done for you, it is actually possible to be kinder to them. It's possible to have a more harmonious relationship even with your family, where often it can be, sometimes it can be very hard because we're so close to each other. So these are some of the tricks to have that unconditional love. And then when it comes to your time for your meditation practice, that is where you really do the practice of having unconditional love. After you have abandoned all the negativity to people around you, then you can sit down and you can actually say to somebody you respect, somebody you find exceptional in this world, somebody who is very worthy of respect, you can say to them, coming from your heart, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be free of suffering. That is a very beautiful thing to do. If you really can do that, think about, you know, you bring up, the best thing to do is often bring up the person you respect the most. Somebody who you really think is a very kind, good-hearted, wise person. And you sit down, you close your eyes, and you allow it to come from your heart. May you be well, may you be happy. Say that from your heart. And if you can do that, say that from your heart. You get a beautiful feeling inside. And that is called the feeling of metta. And that is how you start off on the path of unconditional love. And eventually this grows and grows and grows. And as it grows, the day comes when you cannot really get angry anymore, hardly with anybody, because you accept people for what they are. You have a sense of understanding, compassion, and you really want those people to be happy and well. It's a wonderful and powerful thing to do when that happens. Anyway, I think I've spoken far too much already. So I'm going to, does anybody want to ask any questions straight away, or do you want to? Yes, okay, yeah.
Yes, anyone got a question? It's kind of about people and about change. How do you deal with other people changing? And when you don't, when you least expect it, it's when the influence other people could have on another individual. Is it so strong that some people, because if you know that another person is somewhat could be influenced easily, and when you deal with other people changing, basically it's to do with someone I was close to, and a very close friend of mine had something to do with changing that person's perspective on things I would say, not in a good way. And when someone else changes that you're close to, it's kind of hard to deal with it. So how do you kind of forgive that person as well and try and adjust and try and be stronger in a way in order to bring things back to light, even though you've gotten hurt by that person as well? Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm totally confused myself as well. So should I clear it out or...?
Let me try first of all and see what happens. And if you're not satisfied, you can come back. How's that? Let me guess. Okay. Okay. So I think you're saying something about somebody being influenced by somebody else, and they've changed as a person, and the way they change is not very satisfactory. They change in a strange way, something like that, right? How do you deal with that?
And also, okay. I mean, leaving the influence aside, how do you kind of yourself deal with it? Let's say in a relationship sense, about the other individual changing or doing.
Well, I mean, this is again what unconditional love is all about, right? It's a love without conditions. So this is the whole purpose of this kind of unconditional love, is that if somebody does change, it doesn't change your kind of attitude towards the person. You can still have that same kind of love towards them, even though they change. Because it's not about the person anymore, it's about your kind of relationship with the world and with people around you. It's really about how you look at other people. So it means, and this is the ideal here, is that you understand more and more that the world is the way it is. And the more you understand the world is the way it is, that it will change, it will be a different way, things will become what they weren't before, people will change all the time. The more you can actually accept these things, about the deep understanding inside of you, that things will change. Things are never stable. And that is where, you know, a very big part of unconditional love is that wisdom aspect, where you are wise to the world, so you can accept things as they are. So really, you know, when you have, and this is a very, very high and very lofty kind of expectation of people to have unconditional love. It's something that you work towards very slowly and gradually. And of course, in your situation, you are going to be hurt. When you have a relationship with somebody and they change in the wrong way, it is going to be painful. But what do you learn from that? You learn that people do change. Circumstances change. And you learn that, well, there isn't really much choice very often that you have, except for accepting that people change. And sometimes friendships that used to exist, they will no longer be friendship, because there isn't a basis there for having the friendship anymore. It has to be dissolved. It cannot actually work out any longer. And this is how things are. And, you know, I think the reason why you're asking the question is that, you know, very often people want to change the situation. We don't like this idea of friendship being broken up, of relationships no longer being there, which we used to have before. It's painful. So the first feeling, the first thing you want to do is you want to change the situation. You want to change the person, bring things back to normal. And generally speaking, that is not the right answer. The right answer is to say, things change. I have to let it go. Maybe I can love the person in a new way. Maybe the relationship can take a different direction. Maybe there's something I can do to salvage it. But don't try to change that person into something you would like them to be. This is the opposite of unconditional love, to try to change the other person.
Hello. Maybe I have a similar case as the gentleman there. Like, for example, I have two sons. So I want him to study hard. So due to his bad influence with his friend, he tends to play more computer. So my unconditional love become conditional, meaning if you study harder, I will have more love for you. If you play computer more, I will have less love for you. So I think something to the gentleman of sometimes it's very easy, not easy to handle the love, because on one hand we want them to study hard for their own good, but on the other hand maybe they have other priorities and they don't do that. So how do we juggle with this unconditional? Because the more they study, the harder they study, automatically we have more conditional love, and vice versa.
Yeah, it's true. But I think, you know, being a parent is a very complicated issue. You know, I realize that I've never been a parent myself, and in many ways I'm really happy about that, because I realize how difficult it can be here. And I think that, you know, as a parent, one of the things is that you have to look at the long-term benefit for the child. What is this child's long-term benefit? What is good for them in the long term? And of course, if the child plays computer games all the time, it's going to become completely illiterate. It won't be able to read or do basic calculations or anything like that. In the long term, it's going to be suffering for that child. So if you have compassion for the child, and a certain amount of study is required for a child to grow up and be happy. And it's actually similarly given in the suttas of the Buddha. But the Buddha says that sometimes compassion means that if a child is choking on something, they're eating something, about to die, you put your finger into the throat and you pull out that piece of food, even if you have to draw blood. So even if that child bleeds and shouts at the time, it is the right thing to do. So compassion is an unconditional love. It's a very broad kind of category. It's not about always allowing the child to do what they want to. It's about a kind of broad wisdom about what is right for the child in the long run. So you know, I mean, I always feel a bit embarrassed trying to tell parents how they should raise their children, because basically I don't know. I don't know what is the right thing. It's very easy for me to sort of theorize about the right way of raising a child when I've never done it myself. And I realize it's difficult. And I realize that sometimes you will get upset. Sometimes you will get angry. So just move gradually towards that acceptance. Because one of the things which is also important when raising children is that the child is never going to turn out the way you think it's going to turn out, right? You think that I want my child to be like, you know, scholar of the highest caliber, you know, the best student in class, the most beloved by the classmates, you find the most wonderful girl if you have a son, and the most wonderful boy if you have a girl. And, you know, you want all the good things for your children, of course, because they're close to you. You love them, you have compassion for them, you want them to be happy. So you do these things. But the reality is, you just don't know what's going to happen to your child. What if your child cannot be controlled? You want them to go to school, but they refuse. There comes a point when you can't do anything. There comes a point when your child, you know, becomes a drug addict and decide they want to get into that instead. There comes a point when your child just becomes a criminal. These things happen. There are criminals in the world. They are also somebody's children, right? Somewhere down the line. So the point is that in the end, you cannot control your child. You can only guide them just to some extent. But beyond that, there's nothing you can do. And then what do you do then? Do you then become angry with them? Do you become upset with them? Or do you forgive them for being fallible human beings? Remember that sometimes we take a lot of pride in our children. You are the parents, you think that my children will make me feel, mothers are always like a lot of pride in their children. My son is doing really, really well at school, getting straight A's or whatever, and they have a lot of pride. Now, if you have a child who does the opposite, gets really terrible grades in school and is absolute, can't socialize or anything like that, what are you going to do? Now, a really, really good parent will still have compassion and love for that child, even if they fail completely, do everything wrong. That is the unconditional love. The unconditional love is not allowing them to play computer games all the time. It's to accept them even when they fail. And that was one of those wonderful things that I saw when I went to Changi prison yesterday before the talk at the Miramar Hotel. And I was told there that the one person who always comes and visits those prisoners in Changi is always the mother. The mother always comes. Why? Because the mother forgives the child. Most of them sons up there, forgive the child regardless. Mothers have very often that unconditional love for their children. For fathers, it seems to be not quite as common, but fathers also should have that same unconditional love, whatever happens.
Any other questions? Sorry.
You were saying about unconditional love, right? So how, as in, because sometimes it's quite complicated to mix it with compassion, because you were saying, like, you have to accept who that person is, and you don't give condition for loving them. But what if, let's say, you see someone you really care and you really show concern for changing into the direction of the negative side, and it's really painful to watch that, and at the same time, you want to give that person unconditional love, but at the same time, you don't know how, because it is painful to watch, as in you wouldn't want to not do anything and to, you know, like, to let that person go more to the negative side. You want to bring him back. So how do you actually manage that?
Okay. Like with so many things in life, very often there's not much you can do, you know, because people go according to their own course and conditions, and if they go in the wrong way, very often you can't do anything. If you can do something, do something. If you can't do anything, there's only one solution, letting go. Nothing else you can do. But be very careful with trying to manipulate other people. Make sure that it's not out of self-interest, that because of the benefit of that person. That should be the real reason why you're doing it. Out of the benefit of that person. If there's something you can do, do it. If not, you have to let it go. You have to allow that person to go according to their own cause and conditions. I have found in my own life that the most powerful lesson that I can give to anybody else is not by giving talks or by, you know, I mean, when I was a young monk, I started off on my career as a Buddhist, you know. I thought Buddhist ideas are the best thing that ever happened to the world. This is it, you know. This is the answer to everything, the meaning of life and everything else. And I think that's still true. I still think it is the answer to the meaning of life. But I also realized that for me to go out and sort of tell everybody about how wonderful this is, that's not the answer. Nobody's going to listen to me. They're not interested in what I have to say. People have their own ideas about what is right and wrong. Particularly people who are like your parents, you know. If you become some kind of proselytizing fanatic who's going to tell them off, it will turn them off rather than turn them on. So what actually really, the only thing which really, the most powerful thing in the world is the power of example. So if you, as a daughter, as a friend, in all your capacities in life, you can be a good example to other people, that is when they will look to you and they will say, wow, this is somebody really who has really got the act together. Somebody who is wise. Somebody who is living the Buddhist path in the proper way. The power of example is the most important one. So, you know, unfortunately, the answer is that very often you cannot change people. And the reason you want to change them, of course, is very often you care for them. But there's also a sense, a degree of attachment there as part of that care very often. And there's often that attachment that wants to change. And the care, well, the care is there regardless, even if you don't actually change that person. You can care for them without wanting to change them. That is the unconditional love. We care for them regardless of what they do. Sometimes it's tough to practice these teachings because they're very lofty and very high ideals. So you do your best.
Hello, Ajahn. I'm going to ask these questions on behalf of the youths. One is, how do I deal with my sense of jealousy of my sibling because I think my parents love him or her more? One. Two is, how do I get my parents to understand me better and to have less expectations of me? So I hope this reflects some of your thoughts. And as this is a youth service, right? So I'm asking as a youth.
Gee. Okay. How do I deal with sibling rivalry, sibling jealousy, because you think your parents love your sibling more than they love you? I think it's very hard to know your parents' mind. You don't really know what's happening inside your parents' mind. And parents very often love all their children regardless. And that is the most important thing here. And remember that even though sometimes you feel maybe unfairly treated or you feel that things are going against you not the right way, you can be absolutely sure that regardless of that difference sometimes, the parents are still going to love you. And that was what really matters. So if you have a difficult time, if things are not going right, the parents, your parents will be there to support you when things are not going right. That is what really matters. And don't trust your perceptions too much. It's too easy to think that you are being discriminated against, that your brother and sister are getting all the, you know, the attention that they want. But sometimes it's just so hard to know these things, what is actually going on. Maybe sometimes it's, as I said, the squeaky wheel which gets all the attention, or gets the grease, right? So if the squeaky wheel is like the difficult child, they get the attention because they need the attention sometimes. So don't take anything for granted. Don't try to judge these matters, because it is very, very hard to judge. And instead of fault-finding, instead of looking at your parents through the fault-finding eye, just step back a little bit and think about what your parents actually have done for you in life. I mean, for me, it was such a revelation when I was starting to read the word of the Buddha. And the Buddha says, well, actually, when you think about it, your parents have done pretty much everything for you in your life. When you were a small child, what could you do for yourself? Nothing. You couldn't dress. You couldn't go to the toilet. You know, you couldn't eat. You couldn't do anything. And your parents showed you all these things. Without your parents, you wouldn't be able to be here. Without your parents, you wouldn't know anything. You would be completely clueless, basically. So because of that, sometimes it's just a matter of thinking slightly differently. And when you think slightly differently, you can actually have a sense of gratitude instead of a sense of blame. I mean, I know what it's like to be a teenager, because I've been a teenager myself. It is quite a while ago now, I have to admit. But I know it's difficult. I know it's very hard. I know that often you feel unfairly treated. I know that parents, because you are so close to each other, it is so difficult to get that perspective to see things clearly. And it is very hard. And sometimes what you have to do is just grow up. And so as you grow up, you look back, you think, gee, now I can look at everything in a very different way. So just be careful to be too judgmental. Try just to step back, take a couple of deep breaths, and try to see the good in that relationship rather than the flaws. Because it isn't easy. And of course, it is a two-way thing. Parents need to remember also that a child, particularly in their teenage years or whatever, it is very difficult to grow up, you know, very difficult to become an adult, very difficult to become an independent person. And when the parents remember that, they have compassion for their children, remembering what it was like when they were teenagers. This is one of the most powerful things that a parent can do, to remember what it was like when they were teenagers. Sometimes say to your parents, oh, you know, this, remember what it was like when you were a teenager, right? And then they might have a bit more compassion on you. Try something like that and see what happens. It is never going to be easy. Just try to make the best of these things. What was your second question, Angie? Sorry.
How does a child communicate with their parents when you feel that they don't understand you and you're always trying to meet their expectations or get tired of meeting their expectations?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think it's the same kind of thing. Yeah, it's a similar kind of thing. Is you have to, basically, you have to remember that your parents, basically, they want your best. As the Buddha said, parents basically love their children. Try to remember that. It's very hard. Sometimes it's very difficult to remember because the relationship, again, is so close and it can be so hard to see these things. But if the Buddha says that parents love their children, you can take it for pretty much for granted. That is generally the case. They want your best, even though it may not be clear at the time. So turn around, try to look at it that way, and see if that helps.
What is in a parent's point of view, like, let's say this parent has been showing his or her child, like, unconditional love since young, but when the child grows to adulthood, he or she stays the same. She takes things for granted, and he or she will think that it's what the parents owe him or her. So what can a parent do in such situation? Yeah, because it's a very tough thing to handle, because this adult is still immature, and, you know, it's really hard to, instill, like, this kind of thoughts to this adult that seems like a child. So what can a parent do in such situation?
As I said again, it always comes back to accepting people for what they are. This is what unconditional love is, right? Accepting people for what they are. And you cannot force people to be one way or the other. This just doesn't work. But basically, when people grow older, they will change. This is just the nature of the game. There's nobody who stays exactly the same forever and ever. They do change. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. Sometimes it goes in waves, up and down, back and forth. And this is just the way things are. That's the way it will be. But again, you're not going to be able to change other people. It's not wise to set out changing other people. If you do that, you are asking for suffering. You're going to make the suffering worse. It's very difficult to be a parent, it's difficult for me to give advice because I don't really know from personal experience. These are just very general kind of principles of life, how to deal with people. And those principles, I think, are valid in all relationships, even between parents and children. But of course, between parents and children, there are so many complicating factors because you're so close to each other, you're in the same family, you're with each other every day, and that makes the whole dynamic so much more complicated. You know each other so well, you know every weakness of your parents, and the parents know every weakness of the child, and that makes it so much harder to have unconditional love and just let things be. So again, you have to practice these general principles in a very general way, and then gradually, you will overcome these kind of problems.
Ajahn, thank you very much for a wonderful talk. I'd like to ask, how do you view pleasure and pain with equanimity?
Okay. It depends. There are different types of pleasure and pain. That's the first thing to realize. And there are certain pleasure and pains that are good pleasures and pains. And there are certain pleasure and pains that are not so good. So the very first thing to do is to divide between the good pleasures and pains and take away the bad ones and move towards the good ones. That's point number one. And this is one of the most powerful teachings of the Buddha, because the Buddha basically says that whatever in the world increases the good states inside of you, whatever makes you have more compassion, more kindness, whatever makes you have less anger, ill will, negativity, whatever that is, whatever you do in life should always be to move towards those things that give rise to more wholesome qualities. It's a very powerful teaching. I mean, it's a teaching that I use all the time. Whenever I ask myself, I have a choice, should I go this way or should I go that way? The question is always down to this one thing. Well, what is going to help me maximize my own good qualities as a person? That is the answer to any choice in life to me. So when I ask myself, should I eat this food or that food? Should I live in this monastery or that monastery? Should I come to Singapore to teach in Singapore? I always ask myself, is it going to be beneficial or is it going to be negative? Is it going to help my spiritual practice or detract from my spiritual practice? That is the thing. And it's exactly the same thing with pleasure and pain. There are certain pleasures that are beneficial, certain that are bad. The bad pleasures are the pleasure you get from breaking the five precepts, right? If you get a lot of pleasure out of, killing animals, some people enjoy killing animals. Now, if you get pleasure out of that, then you have a problem, and it's a pleasure you have to move away from. And all pleasures that are involved with, negative things, bad things, breaking the five precepts, that is where you should get away from. The ideal pleasure that you have is the pleasure that comes from unconditional love, right? This is one of the very best pleasures you can have. If you have pure unconditional love, you're going to be doing extremely well in this world. Other good pleasures are the pleasure of compassion. The pleasure, the piti, the rapture you get in meditation is a good pleasure. The pleasure you get from generosity, the sense of blamelessness that you have when you are a kind person, you say something nice. All of these are good pleasures. Go for those. So this is actually more important than looking at pleasure and pain as a group. Divide the group up into different aspects and see the good aspects of pleasure and the bad aspects of pleasure. There's also good and bad pain. That's another thing. The pain, which is a good kind of pain, is the pain that you have to go through to keep the five precepts. Sometimes you don't want to keep the five priests, so you think, oh, you know, I'd like to have a beer or whatever, right? Is that what people think? And of course, if sometimes you have to restrain yourself, and there's a certain amount of pain in that restraint, in saying, no, I'm not going to do that, because in the long run it's going to be detrimental. That is a good kind of pain. And the bad kind of pain is the pain which serves no purpose, and at the time of the Buddha, the bad kind of pain was the pain where they would torture themselves to reach enlightenment, the Atta Kilamatanu Yoga, it's called in the suttas. That is the bad pain. The same thing, if you sit meditation, all you feel is pain all the time, and you get upset and angry about it, it's going to be a bad kind of pain. The purpose of meditation is to feel good about yourself, feel relaxed, feel easy, have compassion, have metta. That is the right way. So distinguish between right pleasure, wrong pleasure, right pain, and wrong pain, and then you are on the right path. Of course, ultimately, in the end, yes, it's true, you want to go beyond pain and pleasure altogether, but that is so far up the path, you know, that you just, in the meantime, you're far better off, I think, you know, focusing on dividing between pleasure and pain. Yeah. Happy with that answer? Yeah? Okay.
Any other questions? Yes.
Okay, well, my question, I want to bring it back to relationships. Getting to a relationship with someone else. Because we've talked about parental relationships with their child. And to a certain extent, you can't really choose your parents. And parents can't choose their child. But in a person-to-person relationship, you choose a person because of his qualities, you know, because of certain reasons. And my question is, if you have unconditional love for that person in a relationship, but that person doesn't have it for you, as you mentioned before, you cannot choose only people who have unconditional love for you. So, is that sustainable? And you can—I mean, you shouldn't quit a relationship as well because of that reason. You shouldn't run away. How do you know that you've chosen the person right in the first place? And how long do you wait to receive that unconditional love? Will it ever come? You know, when should you get out? You know, these are all questions that have been going through my head.
I, you know, again, I would say that the way that you choose the relationships in your life, whether it is whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's a friendship between two people, whatever kind of relationship it is. I mean, with parents, you don't have much choice, as you say. You are stuck with that, and you're going to have to deal with it to the best of your ability. But the way to choose any friendship is, again, on this basis, is it going to lead to something good? Is it going to lead to something bad? And that is, you know, this is the basis on which I choose my teacher. I say, well, Ajahn Brahm, is it going to lead to my advantage as a meditator, as a Buddhist monk, to be with Ajahn Brahm? Or is it not going to lead to my advantage? And I think, yes, so far it's been going very well. It's going in the right direction. So I stick it out with Ajahn Brahm. I've been with him for 17 years. It's quite a long time. But of course, the day might come when suddenly it's not working anymore. You know, suddenly for some reason, you don't know why. It doesn't mean that Ajahn Brahm is bad or I am bad or that. There may be some other obstacle which doesn't make the relationship work anymore. He's not, you know, something gets in the way. I can't imagine what it would be, but you never know. Things are uncertain, right? Would I be ready to leave? And the answer is yes, of course I would leave, because there is no basis, any reason for staying anymore. If the reason you're there is to grow spiritually, and it's not happening, and the whole point of being there is lost. So you let it be. You don't do anything like that. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't respect Ajahn Brahm. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't care for him or anything like that. I still would, but I wouldn't have to be around him anywhere. I could go somewhere else. And it is maybe the same thing in your case. If there's somebody like a friend who has gone astray. I don't know if all of you are friends together talking about the same person, perhaps, I don't know. But if that happens, it's okay. You know, allow that person to go off, you know, on a long leash somewhere, and allow them to go off. Don't have any harbor, any anger to them because they're no longer your friend, because they're not doing the right thing. Don't be angry, upset about it. Just know that people are like this. They change. They go in a different direction. They go off somewhere else. Allow them to do that. And then the time may come when they come back again. And then because you never had any anger, because you understood them, because you allowed them that freedom to go off and do their own thing, the relationship is back there where it was before when they came back again. This is the power of these things. I mean, I have seen how Ajahn Brahm has been dealing with this. I don't know if you've heard about all this bhikkhuni ordination things we had in Perth. Probably everybody has. And I've seen how he dealt with that. And I, you know, to be honest with you, I'm very impressed with how he's able to deal with these things. Because he's basically out there on his own, and he does something which he thinks is right. And then there is this enormous backlash from what happens. And what does he do? Does he get angry? Does he get upset? Does he say that these people are bad people? And I think, no, he doesn't. In fact, as soon as he talks to them again, as soon as with them again, he doesn't have any anger whatsoever. There is that same unconditional love there, regardless of what they do. So you get a separation because of different views, different ideas about what is right and wrong in the world, about how you should go about these things. The separation happens. But because there's no anger there, because there's unconditional love, as soon as that thing is, as soon as we come back together again, the problem is gone. That is how to deal with it, I think. Yeah.
Good. I think we have a good discussion. Any other questions to clarify doubts? I think we may have time for one or two more. Anyone?
Okay, I'll read out. I actually intended to read this, but I talked for far too long before, so this is often what happens. So this is a very nice sutta. I like to always bring into the discussion the word of the Buddha, because this is the foundation stone for all Buddhism. So it's very useful to actually know what the Buddha said. As I mentioned before, you can listen to all kinds of Buddhist teachers, whether they are monks or nuns or lay people, whoever they are. But sometimes we hear what seems to be conflicting information of what the practice actually is like. But if you go to the source, then you can sort of validate what actually is the real teaching. Sometimes it's difficult to go to the source because you may not even understand the source properly. But after a while, you start to get your mind around these teachings and you start to understand how they work. Now this sutta is called the Simile of the Saw. And this sutta, it starts off with this slave woman. At the time of the Buddha, they had slaves. And this slave woman, she was like the slave of this woman who had a very good reputation for being very kind and very gentle. So the slave things, excuse me, this slave thinks that I'm going to test my mistress. I'm going to test this woman who has this good reputation. So she gets up late in the day. And then the mistress comes around and says, "Why are you getting up late?" "Oh, no particular reason, I'm just getting up late." And of course, eventually, this mistress gets really angry and she hits her slave woman over the head. And then the slave woman runs into the streets and says, "Oh, look at what my master, my mistress did to me. She hit me over the head." Excuse me. So this is how this sutta goes. And the point with that, of course, is that metta is something which is not a superficial thing. You don't just have metta when things go right, you also have metta when things go wrong. Yeah? And this is what what it really is about, to have metta when it goes wrong. Yeah? Because that is when it's difficult. When everything goes right, most people can have a sense of goodwill. Yeah? And then this sutta goes on, towards the very end of this sutta, the Buddha lays down what is like the standard that is required in the world, how we should actually act to really be following the Buddha's teachings. And it's a very high standard, and it's a very it's good to know this, because then at least you know what the standard is, and then you can sort of work towards that. Please don't feel inadequate because of that, because that just defeats the purpose, but just to know where this thing is headed, so to speak. So this is what the Buddha says to his monks. He says, "Monks, even if bandits were to saw you up savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handled saw, if you get angry, you would not be practicing my teaching. Even then, you should train yourselves thus. Our minds will be unaffected. We will say no bad words. We will remain sympathetic with a mind of metta, goodwill, with no inner hate. We shall keep pervading those people with a mind imbued with goodwill, and beginning with them, we will keep pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with goodwill, abundant, expansive, immeasurable, free from hostility, free from ill will. That is how you should train yourselves. Very powerful simile here. And then the Buddha says, monks, if you attend constantly to this admonition in the simile of the soul, do you see any speech, slight or gross, that you could not endure? No, Lord. Then attend constantly to this admonition on the simile of the soul, and that will be for your long-term welfare and happiness. So the point of the simile is that when you do develop metta to the maximum, then you don't get angry anymore. You go beyond anger, and you become a person who, at the very most, when somebody does bad things, you are equanimous. And you may not have maybe metta towards them, because they might be difficult, but at the very least, you are equanimous towards them. You never get angry, you never get upset anymore. That is the standard of the Buddha. It's a beautiful standard. It's a very high standard, but it's very nice to keep that in mind. So, does that make sense? Do you think you could do that? Do you think you could sort of, if somebody takes you limb by limb and saws you apart, and you could have metta towards them? Huh? I think that's possible. Huh? It is a high standard. But it is good, because it shows you that you can actually attend to things in a different way from what you're used to. You can turn your attention around. You can look at the world differently. Huh? And that is what is so powerful about this, you know? You can actually, instead of focusing on you being hurt, you think, these poor bandits, they're making lots of bad karma, you know, how can I help them not to get so much bad karma, or, you know, something like that. That's how you think instead. Like you're turning around. You know that pleasure and pain are impossible to get rid of in this world, so if somebody saws you up, okay, it's just more pain, that's all. It's no big deal, pain is to be expected. That's how you think, right? So that's what you have to try. That is the standard the Buddha laid down for us. And if people can do that, then surely each one of us can endure some of the problems that we encounter in our daily life. Some of the bad words we hear, some of the unthoughtful actions, we can endure those things if other people can endure this kind of action. Any more questions, anybody? Anything you want to ask?
How to eliminate the roots of greed, hatred and delusion?
Okay, you start off by reading the Tipitaka from cover to cover. It's a pretty long course, you know. It's a pretty big one. So, yeah, well, this is the thing that, one thing I should say, and you have a point, is that, of course, by practicing metta, you're not actually abandoning the root of hatred. The root is still there. What you're doing is you're abandoning it temporarily. And it can arise again. If you stop practicing metta, it will arise again in the future. But this is a way that you can temporarily abandon it. You know, if imagine just getting there. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty rare to find anybody in the world who never has any anger, never any kind of irritation. It's incredibly rare. So if you can get there, then you can find somebody to tell you the rest of the path after that, because that's already a long way. But in brief, beyond that, if you have that ability, it means that your samadhi, your meditation is going to be incredibly profound. And with that kind of profound meditation, all you need to do is you turn your attention to the three characteristics and you investigate your mind in terms of those three characteristics. And that's how you eliminate greed, hatred and delusion, you know, once and for all. But essentially, if you can just, you know, get to the point where you don't have any anger anymore, wow. Then you really have, you know, made it in this life. Let's put it that way. Yeah. So,
can I say something? Maybe as a prerogative as a president, I can say a few things. As a parent as well. Oh, there you are. A friendship between two individual adults is a bit different from a children and parent. A children and parent, like being a parent, I know that we have certain authority. Not so much because we are parent, but because the child looks towards us. Because we provide there is the allowance and the freedom, what time you come back, you know. So as a parent, because Ajahn is not a parent, so we are parents, so I think we know a bit more that we can actually have a great influence over children. If we contemplate on that, we're very powerful, using an idea of a God. We are like a God to the children because we control so much things in their lives. We can make it so easy for them. So the word I will use in bringing up children is skillful means. You got to do it nice. You wouldn't want to make it worse, the relationship. So you got to think inducement and all sorts of ways. So we can affect our children by a great deal. And bringing them to BF, to the youth, to the YPs, is very helpful. Meeting young youth who are all trying to understand applying a Dharma is a great. And for the youth, to the parents, to bring them here, it also is useful. All of us have different levels of practice or experience. So coming here, they'll mix and then they'll hear the Dharma. And if they meditate, then things become clearer and they can experience some of these things, the sufferings that we talk about, friends or partners who do not respond and who sort of goes off. You know, Ajahn Brahm has had a story about the wife who went off with the milkman. And this is the ultimate, you know. It's real ultimate because it's not even, you're not even married and your friend goes off. But imagine your children, you know, go off to drugs. And I think this is the most painful thing. It's like cutting off a limb. Your partners lose interest in you and goes off, especially a married couple. These are very painful stuff. Maybe Ajahn may have experienced, but it's like sawing off an arm and a leg and pulling a heart out, you know. I think those who have experienced it will know that. So having said that, sometimes when I've spoken to people before about that. He says, well, this simile is a bit hard to swallow. It's almost like thinking of an arm. But you have no choice sometimes, you know. I'll say, sister, here, if you are caught by bandits and sawing your arm, what can you do? You can't do anything. So the Dharma better kick in. You're going to die anyway. So you better have the right thought and how to deal with this. And the Dharma makes a lot of sense at the time. You really have to be at that level. So when your partner walks on you, or your spouse walks on you, or when your child walks on you, you can't do anything. If the child wants to leave, you can't do anything, especially if it's 18, 19, you can't do anything, you know. And by 21, bye-bye, you know, and she ain't going to return. So unless you can use skillful means, unless you can find a way, and the way is unconditional. Son, if you are going to drunk, all right, call me. I'll be there to bring you back. If you stab somebody, call me. I'll look for the best lawyer for you. Can you do that? And this is unconditional. If your friend want to leave you because, you know, for a better looking guy or a girl, you know, then let it be. But if you need somebody to call, you need help, give me a call. That's unconditional, right? So you got to get your limbs cut a few times, then you realize that you have no choice, really, you know. Because this is what, it's a reality. You can cry and you kick the, but it's not going to solve your problem. But that type of conditional is actually so empowering. It's so rewarding to you and the other person as well. And you become such a wonderful parent, such a wonderful friend. You know, no one, if you can do it with people around us, they will never leave you because you are such a wonderful resource. And it's all come from unconditional love and metta. And the person that you hate the most and who dislike you or you think dislike you, just metta them every day. And you get softer and softer. Yeah, your enemies, just do it every day. You find that you just don't have that anger anymore after a while. And if you cannot matter them, then you must know it's not them. You have a problem. You cannot matter them. You have a problem with your hands. You know, and on your last minute, and you don't know where we are going to go, maybe tomorrow, they'll be first thing in your mind when the flashback comes and you see their face, you know. And you'll be screaming while you're in bed. So, I mean, you don't want to go through that type of agony, right? Or your son on drugs, for example. But if it happens, you can't. Your limbs have been cut, and you'll die any moment. You can't do anything. So you got to look at that. Because we think we'll never die. We think that our life goes on. We want to change everybody else, but we think looking at ourselves. So this unconditional love is so powerful, and it's so empowering, I think. Thank you, Ajahn.
Very nice words. This is the real words from somebody knows. Yeah. Okay, anything else that anybody else wants to say or add or ask or about this topic? Yeah. Or anything else?
Hi, Ajahn. I want to ask on behalf of my friend, this question is, what is our life worth living for?
Sorry? What was that?
What was our life worth living for?
Okay.
Our purpose. Yeah.
What? Okay, so the question is, what is the life worth living for? Huh?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Life, what life is worth living for is to become a happier person. That's what we all want. And you all, I mean, I've talked about this this morning. Basically, that if you look inside of you, we are always full of desires. We always want to go somewhere. We always want to fulfill those desires. We always want to, we're moving towards something all the time. And it is that fulfillment of those desires which really is the goal of life. But we don't know how to fulfill those desires. We always get it wrong. We always think that the way to fulfill our desires is to seek the object of desire. But that is endless. It never stops. So the way to actually fulfill the desire, to feel the reason you have a desire, because you don't feel complete inside of you, you feel a sense of emptiness, there's something there which isn't fulfilled, is that you are not a complete person. Satisfaction, the contentment isn't there. So what you want, what you really want in life, is to have that sense of completeness, of fulfillment inside of you, where you don't actually need that craving anymore. That is the purpose of life. So one day, if you keep practicing the Buddhist path, and this is what the Buddhist path promises according to the Buddha, one day your contentment, your satisfaction will be so complete that the craving actually stops, because there's nothing really for you to want anymore, to desire anymore. That is the purpose of life. Then you have solved this thing which always bothers you inside of you, this irritation which always needs to go on to something else, always needs to move on somewhere else, can never stand still, can never do anything. And you feel completeness inside of you. Completeness inside of you is a very powerful feeling. It's a feeling of peace, a feeling of contentment, a feeling that there is nothing more that needs to be done in the world. That is the purpose of life, the meaning of life. It goes even beyond that. But if you get that far, then you have, you know, really, really gone a long, long way on the Buddhist path. You happy with that answer? Yeah? Okay.
I think we have time for one last question. Yes, any one last question? Yes.
Hello. Is there any real thing like unconditional love between couples, whether they are married or unmarried?
I think. More or less there is. I think most relationships, there is some degree of attachment, some degree of, you know, if you lose them, you'll be very sad. And that, you know, is a result of the attachment that you have to somebody else. So most romantic relationships, there will be some degree of that between them. But there are, you know, there are a huge variety in the relationships you can have with people, even on the romantic side. And some relationships can be almost, you know, like very pure and very beautiful, where you actually are, basically, you are like, you know, spiritual partners in life, and you do things in a good way, and you have a sense of kindness and compassion to each other. I think, you know, if you didn't have any attachment at all, you'd probably go off and become monks and nuns or something, right? So it wouldn't be there. So there's usually some element of attachment there in any kind of relationship. But certainly, it is possible to make that relationship a much more pure one and a much more beautiful one by, you know, practicing the spiritual path together, by moving in the right direction together, and actually having a true sense of compassion and kindness to each other, rather than having this relationship based on attachment, where you're holding on because that other person is, you know, because it means so much to you that you cannot imagine living without him or her. That is when it gets bad. But if you have true sense of compassion, it means that you can let them go sometimes. You can leave them maybe for it. They can go away for a couple of weeks and do retreat on their own. You don't have to be with them all the time. You allow them to do things that they otherwise would not. You don't hold very tight reins with that person. That is a kind of a really, really good, a beautiful relationship of the romantic kind, I think. Is that what you were asking? Angie? Yeah.
What happens if you're going out with someone who declares love for you, of course, and then you decide that it's not a good relation to continue with? and then that person threatens to kill herself or himself. What do you do in that situation? Because you feel trapped due to the extent of attachment, so you feel obligated to stay in that relationship. I think sometimes the youth face this, right, when they got someone crazy about them. So be careful of crazy people.
Yeah, I mean, it's very unfortunate that people should be so manipulative of other people, of course. But if that is the case, you have to be very careful, and you have to try to find a way around that problem. Usually there is a way. Usually you don't have to say, either I stay with them, or I leave them and they kill themselves. That's not usually the... Usually there are options in between, kind of halfway in between. And you say to the person, we need to resolve this. We have to talk to somebody. We need a third party involved in this, because this is not working out. And the third party is often a very useful thing, in particularly in relationships, because in relationships you're so close together, it's very hard to see the trees, not the forest for the trees, or which way does it go now? Anyway, it's so hard to see things because it's so close to you. And sometimes getting a third party in as a mediator to help you out is a very, very powerful and very useful thing here. And don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of asking for help. Sometimes we are too proud. Sometimes we are too kind of self-reliant. We don't want to ask other people for help. But actually, other people can sometimes be very, very helpful in these kind of circumstances, in these kind of situations, particularly when something is very close to you. And one of the great things about being, you know, a monastic is that you sometimes you have more perspective because you stand back more from society. You stand back more from human relationships. And you look at it from outside, so to speak. And that is one of the great things about being a monk or a nun. But you have that sense of perspective. And anybody who is not part of that relationship, whether they are a counselor, whether they are a teacher, somebody both of you respect, is very likely to be able to help you to find a solution to that problem. So try that. And of course, in the meantime, if they really do threaten with killing themselves, then don't just say, oh, I don't care about you, you know, you can kill yourself if you like. Be careful with that, because if they then do kill themselves, you might feel very guilty afterwards. So be careful with that sort of thing as well. Ask yourself, well, what is the best way we can go forward here? You know, don't be too close, don't be too far away. Find a third way. There usually is a middle way in all of these situations. Come to the Buddhist Fellowship, ask Angie what to do. not only Angie, anybody else who you feel that you trust, go to Henry, the president now, go to anybody here. There's so many wise people here. You've heard here today, many people have very good ideas how to deal with difficult relationships. And ask them for their advice. What can we do? How can we move forward on this issue? And there usually is a solution. It's not usually one or the other. There usually is a middle way that you can find it. Okay.
Okay. So I say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So, you know,